Time to explain the Destiny Lore podcast, where friends come together to talk about Destiny lore. This is episode 15. I'm Mike. My pronouns are he, him. And with me, as usual, is my co-host, Kit.
Hello, I'm Kit. My pronouns are he, him, or they, them.
Welcome back, Kit.
Thank you. Welcome back. We took a little week off last week.
Which feels like a fucking year.
I know. It's kind of amazing. I don't know how
we had
happened.
1 week off.
I know, but it feels like we haven't done anything in forever. But
I know.
That's okay. We're back and bigger than ever here. Did you get up to anything fun in that time? Anything you want to share with the class, the listenership?
Do I want to incriminate myself? No.
Maybe no, because it's a recording of a, you know.
Yeah, nothing. Nothing interesting. Very boring.
I took a tiny trip, and that was fun. Just the world's tiniest little trip. Yeah, it was nice. Just like an hour away, see some friends, but good to get out of. If you've been like staying home for as long as most of us have been here through the year of pandemic quarantine, it's nice just to, even if you just drive somewhere that isn't like the three places that you usually drive, even that can be kind of a treat. So
I like the act of driving, but just seeing different things is good. Like, I drive to band practice once a week, and that's like an hour each way. But it's like, oh, I'm seeing other things.
Right, like, that's different.
Yeah.
I've never seen that before. Like, oh, yeah. So that's kind of fun. It's the little things.
Now that you mention it, I did get to see some family, which I haven't seen since quarantine. So that was really nice.
Good.
So, yeah.
Good. Very good. Awesome.
Yeah, it was very, very relaxing and good.
You need that.
Yes.
We all need that.
We all need that.
We all need that.
Yes.
So, yeah, I guess we'll pick it right back up.
Yeah, so in terms of Destiny 2, we took off the weeks of the season of the Splicer that we didn't cover yet are week 7 and 8. As of this recording, we're in week 9 right now, where Solstice of Heroes started up. So we're going to be catching up on Season of the Splicer week 7 and 8. Maybe a little bit of our initial thoughts of Solstice and... So that's what the episode's going to be today. But before we get into that, there were some things. I hope everybody enjoyed the Pride Month Spectacular.
Yeah, I hope that you did. That was really fun to make.
You did a great job hosting. I'm very proud of you.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate that. That's kind. It was fun. Nice to. Kind of a fun energy to have more voices, like literally a larger number of people on the pod. So if you didn't get a chance to listen to that, definitely go back and enjoy. That was really fun. Pride Month goes all year round. It's not like we all disappear after 1 month, so, you know. We'll be here being gay as fuck, you know, for the foreseeable future, but it's nice to have a chance to put some of that stuff out there. You know, it's a nice excuse, I guess, having a special month, so. Yeah, if you didn't get to that, please check it out.
Yeah, I learned a lot listening to that episode, so it was very entertaining and educational for me, so I appreciate it.
That's good. I'm glad. I'm glad you got something out of it.
Some other cleanup from your and my last episode together that I wanted to touch on quick before we got into Spicer stuff. I just wanted to kind of clarify some of my thoughts, because you and I left off talking about the Destiny comic collection.
Yep.
And something that didn't really like solidify for me until after the fact. I don't know if I effectively got my point across about like where I was coming from with my thoughts on the comic. So I just wanted to quickly say that some of what does not work for me about the Destiny comics that have come out so far, I was able to think of a specific example, and that was in the Warmind comic, where you see the Battle of Twilight Gap depicted, which is a very important event in the Destiny in the history of the Last City in the Destiny universe, and it being depicted in the way that they depict it in the comic is they go, oh, well, the Crucible map is called Twilight Gap, and like that being in the game presumably is what spun the lore backstory off of it for the writing team. But in the game, it's like it's a Crucible, you know, it's designed as a PvP map.
Right, it's designed. So like, it's designed around gunplay and ability usage, and all the sight lines and everything are designed for that reason, like for PvP play, not to showcase a battle, and not even really like a, you know, not to showcase a story. It's very gameplay focused.
Right, exactly. Like it's not the trappings of it as you see it in the game make it look plausibly real, like it's a real space, but the bones of it are just a PvP map. Like that's the reason why it looks the way it does.
Right.
It's not designed to be like a real place.
It's like someone wrote fan fiction about like, you know, CSGO's dust or whatever.
Right. Like no matter how many trappings they put on it to make it seem more like a real place, there are still things that like would not be laid out the way they are if it was meant to be an actual place where people live and not a CSGO map.
Mm-hmm.
So like in the comic, when they try to depict this mythic battle of Twilight Gap, in my opinion, it looks very ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Because it looks like you're just cramming a bunch of shit into this tiny space. Like, this epic battle of Twilight Gap happened in, like, somebody's studio apartment.
Yeah. Totally. It's like, if this was a citywide battle, I want it to feel like a citywide battle and not a, like, literally, like, three streets. Like, that's not, it doesn't feel very big.
Right. Like, in that same comic, you have Anna, the legendary hunter, who made her name at Twilight Gap, and her legend is that she left pools of light behind from her golden gun that burned all the way to the present day. And in the comic, she's like the fucking Three Stooges, like, whoops, tripped on a banana peel and fell off a cliff, and this gives me the opportunity to fake my death.
Right.
But it just comes off really silly, and it's like, yeah. I guess I could see if you were trying to do something about, like, the legends that we hear are not entirely the truth, and like when we meet people, like they're just people. But that's not what I'm here for. I'm here for the big legendary epic mythic shit.
Yeah, and also it doesn't come across that way at all, because the big legendary epic mythic shit isn't happening, really. That's not what it looks like. It's one thing to show, you know, Anna kind of sneaking away in the chaos of battle, but it doesn't really feel like that. It's like, it's kind of a failed attempt, I think.
Right.
Which is fine.
Yeah. So that's, hopefully that gets my point across a little better. It's like, I think that Destiny, trying to represent the Destiny universe in media outside of the game, needs to, whoever does that needs to expand it beyond the in-game models.
Yeah.
Like, the in-game models are made how they are because of the limitations of the video game.
Right.
But, like, if we were watching a Destiny TV show, for example, I would want there to be hallmarks that I recognize, but I don't need, like, Zavala's office to look exactly like it does in the game.
Right.
I don't need the tower to look exactly like it does in the game. If there's a scene at the Lost Sector and the Tangled Shore where they go to, you know, that Lost Sector that's like a bar?
Yeah.
Like, if that just looked like it did in the game, it would look ridiculous because it'd be tiny.
Yeah.
It would be, like, implausible.
Right.
Like, just make it look like people could interact with it in reality, and don't worry so much about trying to make it a one-to-one thing.
Yeah, that's the problem with adaptation, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just, you just described, like, the central problem of adapting one thing to a different medium. Yeah,
I guess so.
Are some people who feel like that should be 100% faithful to the source material, whatever the source material is, but I do not think necessarily that video game spaces make great source material for comic books, is maybe what we learned here. Or they might, but you might need to take a little bit more liberty with what you're depicting.
Yes, that's... Exactly.
Then, yeah, totally.
Exactly, that's totally what I'm saying. Take the liberties with it. I think it, in my opinion, is more successful when you take liberties with it.
Yeah. I'm sure there are many people who don't agree. And they can get fucked. Just kidding. If you feel that way, you don't have to get fucked. I'm just saying, I feel...
Go on.
I just can picture the kind of Crucible Destiny player who wants the comic to look exactly like the Twilight Gap map. And it's not me, but I can picture them. And I can picture them being rather loud about it on a forum somewhere.
Like, if you're up to me, it's like, okay, this is an outpost along the region that is Twilight Gap. Sure. But not to be like, this is specifically where the Battle of Twilight Gap happened on this Crucible map. Silly to me.
Yeah, just a little bit. More than a little bit.
I also wanted to follow up on one of the conversations we had last time was... spoilers. if you haven't caught up to Season of the Splicer Week 8, and Week 9, I guess, really, spoilers for all that from here on out. Okay, you've been warned.
Yep, there it is. If you're still here, here we go.
Yep. Another conversation you and I had was when Savathun showed up in the last city. We were talking about what form had she taken. It was kind of unclear to us. And you brought up the theory of perhaps she has used the same methods as the Nine who were able to produce Xur. Because we were, as opposed to us being like, has she taken the form of someone we know?
Right.
Which I guess that could still be the method of having done that. Anyway, you had brought that theory up of like,
yeah,
maybe she's used the gate somehow to create a form similar to Xur.
Yeah.
And the more I sat with that after that episode, the more credible I found that to be, and it made me think of my mind went back to the book, the Dust book, and the Stolen Intelligence book. There's one entry from each of those. One is the Dust one is the gate, and the Stolen Intelligence one is how do you say this?
Cocytus. I don't know.
Cocytus?
Cocytus feels weird, but...
Cocytus?
I don't know.
Something like
cocytus,
that.
Cocytus something.
C-O-C-Y-T-U-S.
Yeah. So those are the two sort of descriptions of things coming through the gate, and the similarities in those descriptions to what we were seeing... in the entry right from Beneath the Endless Night, the gangling black mass and things like them, that's what led me to think is the similarity of the descriptions of these physical bodies, these physical forms.
Right.
Yeah, thick black hydrocarbon tar and Cocytus. So yeah, I think we're right. I think that... but were you going to talk about Crota here?
Well, yeah, because that was the next one I was going to say, is that the other layer of that was that in those entries, because there were like these gates have been around since the Golden Age and no one knew why, and there was research teams there to study them, and at post collapse, at some now there are in the Destiny universe present day, there are researchers out there also studying them and digging up this history on them. And so when Crota was around at some point in the past, they note that Crota had control of these gates and the Hive had control, but Crota specifically. And they could not discern why. So after you brought up that theory, I was like, oh, that's an extra... that's extra evidence towards that theory, in my opinion. Of not just that the gates produced like the result, like the description of the body is similar, and also there's a direct connection to the Hive there, Crota being, you know, part of the Hive royal family.
Right.
So there's that additional link to like, oh yeah, like that's how Sabathun would probably know about the existence of these gates to begin with.
Yep.
Like, that seems very plausible to me, so...
Right, and then...
I just wanted to give you some props and back up your theory there a little more.
Yeah, thank you. That's what's fun about this, is upon further reflection, sometimes more things become clear, more ideas about what might be going on surface. So, we're in conversation with ourselves, too, as we go on this journey together through the world of the lore.
Did they intend that to be the case when they wrote that little tidbit? Maybe, maybe not.
Yeah.
But it's cool, like, down the road when somebody else picks it up and goes, oh, there's this little crumb here. I can use that.
Right, exactly. I can use this to explain something that's happening now. Yeah.
Right.
And that's so cool to me. I just love that stuff, so.
Definitely.
One more piece of housekeeping. Just funny, we're doing housekeeping for ages here. But I can talk about Jason Schreier if you want.
Sure.
I feel
sure.
confident about it.
Okay. then by all means.
So we had discussed way back in episode one. We had talked about a book written by Jason Schreier, who's a sort of well-known games journalist. And what is the book called, Mike? Do you remember?
It's called Blood, Sweat, and Pixels.
Okay, and that's about the process of making games, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So we had talked...
The whole thing is like, this is a... Each chapter in the book describes a game which went through some sort of tumultuous... I mean, every game goes through tumultuous development period, but games which are either like infamous... like Vanilla Destiny was, or games which were hyped up and then never came out. And so it was like, oh, here's the stories behind what happened with these games.
Right. So, which is interesting and we had talked about as something, you know, worth looking into. I have slightly soured on this author, Jason Schreier. More than slightly. I have significantly soured on this author.
Yes, as have I.
Because of something that happened recently. There's an article on Bloomberg.com from June the 22nd, or 21st rather, that he wrote. Basically, there is a small developer who is working on a game, clearly struggling to produce a game, who got caught up in this conspiracy theory. People started to say that, you know, this small developer was actually a front for Hideo Kojima, the guy who made Metal Gear. Right? No, not Metal Gear. Wait, am I wrong? Hold on. Back up. Beep, beep, beep. Yes, okay, sorry. I thought I was wrong for a second.
No.
So, but, you know, this famous sort of superstar auteur game developer, Hideo Kojima, also famous for Silent Hill. People are really horny for a new Silent Hill game.
Right, because of that PT.
This is all, like, more general video game history that, like, I don't think we necessarily need to get into here, but the problem that I'm having, so this would be a big deal if true. Like, big if true, this famous auteur game developer is working through a small studio to make a much bigger game, and that's what's really going on here. And it's not unheard of for this kind of thing to happen with this particular figure, Kojima. It's pretty clearly not what's happening here. And the article, as written, really comes across to me. It's just, like, frustrating because it's written with a lot of, like, passive voice and, oh, a conspiracy theory was whipped up and blah, blah, blah. But it's like, bro, you're the one... Jason Schreier, you wrote an article for a major publication that is more about the conspiracy theory than it is about the game itself or the developer or the individual. And, like, the developer's response is an afterthought, but the conspiracy is fully fleshed out and outlined in this, like, publication of repute. So to me, it comes across as I think he knew that the story wasn't, that, you know, this conspiracy wasn't true, but because it was the better story, that's what he wrote. And it has apparently caused a huge amount of negative attention to go to this small developer. It's like an indie game. They don't have that much money. They have trouble funding their games. And he had a choice in how he covered that. And as someone who's intimately familiar with game development from writing the literal book on it, I would have thought he would have been more responsible with how he covered this thing, i.e. not drumming up the conspiracy theory, but instead emphasizing what I think is probably the truth, which is this is a small developer who's struggling, you know, why don't we look at what they're doing? So I thought it really grossed me out. It really comes across as just foregrounding, just saying, like, you know, oh, this guy is caught up in this conspiracy. And it's just like, well, you're the one who perpetuated it. Like, you're the one, like, put out an article. You could have used this, you know, you could have said more clearly. It just struck me as a little bit, like, morally bankrupt to do. And then he really doubled down on defending that choice online, which is where he really, I think, lost you, Mike, right? Like, that he doubled down on defending that.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you with the article itself. Yeah. Like, not that I needed any more.
Yeah.
It's just that, additionally, when people confronted him about it on Twitter, he totally doubled down on it and continued to make things worse.
Right. So,
like, did not take the L, did not take any accountability or responsibility.
No. And it is clearly in a vastly different position from a small developer, like right. relatively unknown, you know, trying to create games in a really fucked up ecosystem of games. So, you know, just a word to the wise.
Right, like, and on top of that, you're taking, you're one of the few, like, you know, journalism is in a fucked state right now, but there are a select few number of people who are doing very well for themselves and have a huge audience.
Yeah.
You know, like millions of people or whatever, hundreds of thousands of people reading you, know your name, you have that weight, like, with, you know, and oh, gamers, yes, very a very historically well-tempered group of people.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And now on top of the nightmare that is games development and the evils of the games industry, now you're going to, like, by doing the things that you described, Kit, he is, like, now you're putting a target on this person for hundreds of thousands of people of frenzied
right.
gamers right. on this person
who are, like, going to be mad. They're going to be angry that something is not what they want it to be when it was never ever supposed to be that. And they are right. famously aggressive people. You know, gamer harassment campaigns are fucking awful. So
yeah. Yeah, so, like, that's the additional level yeah. of it.
Yeah.
That's really fucked.
Yeah. The harassment is extremely real in that industry, and you have a responsibility to not encourage it.
And I feel the need to just say, this is our personal opinion.
Yeah.
You know, this is yep. all... based on us reading the article and seeing the interactions on Twitter,
yep.
We're just giving you our off the cuff take on all this.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I felt we needed to say something because we had. There's a piece of Destiny history that we brought up in an earlier episode, so I felt the need to address it.
Yeah, def. All right.
Thank you for taking that one.
Yeah, no worries. I felt confident. Okay. The season of the Splicer, week 7 and 8.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. week 7 was funny because I wasn't going to do the story stuff on Tuesday night for whatever reason. I was gonna play, you know, PvP or something. And I logged mm-hmm. in, and I logged in to go to the tower and pick up my bounties. And I was like, wait a second, because what did we find in the tower, Michael?
Taken blights,
just balls of taken, just fucking right in the middle of the tower.
Yep.
I was like, that's bad.
That was a great oh shit moment. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was great. Yeah. Like, how far this has come. Like, it's gone from the Vex stuff. You know, it's so far entwined. That fucking rocked. So then I went and did the story because I was like, well, I have to know.
Yeah, I was like, there's no way I'm getting through this week unspoiled if I don't just do it tonight.
Yeah. Totally.
So then... at the end of week 7, Endless Night, the Endless Night page that week takes place before the cutscene we see at the end of that mission, which is Lakshmi approaching, Lakshmi and Hideo, another Hideo,
mm-hmm. yeah.
not Kojima.
Different Hideo.
Approaching Saint and soliciting him to join their coup and become the new Vanguard commander again, I guess. mm-hmm. So then the end of our mission is Saint and Osiris meeting, and Saint's like, hey, Osiris, I gotta tell you something. Lakshmi propositioned me for this coup. And Osiris is like, oh yeah, I already know about that. We gotta be chill about it, though, because we don't want Lakshmi to know that we're onto her, and that might just incite more violence. So let her believe that you're on board, and we'll try to see what more information we could get.
Right.
And then Osiris looks at us and is like, don't tell anyone what happened.
I really love it.
Oh, great. Thanks for fucking implicating me in all this, you fucker.
Uh-huh, yeah, right. Now I'm involved.
Then we go to the radio, and what happens there?
fucking Lakshmi does her shit again. She says she's like complains about being silenced, doesn't she? She's like,
yeah, the fucking classic reactionary tactic.
It's so annoying.
Of getting on the mass media and saying that you've been silenced.
Yeah, okay. Like, okay, Lakshmi, like, we all hear you, though, is the thing. Like, I don't know if
right.
You've been silenced.
Yep.
Here,
you,
buddy.
You have access to the platform that nobody else has.
But you're the one being
silenced.
But
yeah, no, you're being silenced, sure.
Yep. Yeah, so that was sort of, Lakshmi. I mean, it's well written, I'll give you that. It's working. The analogy is working.
Yes.
So that was, yeah, so then, so is week 7 where we, is that where we confront Korea, or is that 8?
That was 8.
That was 8, okay, never mind then.
So yeah, Lakshmi says she wants to drain the swamp. That was my joke.
Give it back to the people. Get all these politicians in the vanguard out and get the common man in there. When really,
right,
we all know
right.
that Lakshmi's goal is just to install herself as the highest power in the city based on that
exactly.
lore piece we had of the, you know, this 9 different realities. The last one is what she's in control. So
exactly.
Hmm.
Yep. So that was week 7. I don't really have any big thoughts about week 7.
Yeah.
Week 8 is we find Quiria's lair through Mithrax, and we go in to confront it and fight Quiria Blade Transform, the Dreaming Mind.
Mm. Who is responsible for the Dreaming City, right? As we've discussed.
Right.
The whole
right.
curse
yep.
situation there. So, you know, kind of a big deal.
Yep. Yeah. Which I like the acknowledgement of. Ikora has a line where they kind of brought it up before, but just having it brought back to the forefront mm-hmm. was nice to make that connection.
Yeah, definitely.
Put it in the game.
Yeah. Right. Remind
put
us.
Put it right. I shouldn't say that. I should put it right in front of the player is what I should say.
Mm-hmm. Make it unmissable to the player.
Right, exactly.
Totally.
And I think we were talking about the dialogue in Expunge, like the little the text that comes up in the UI that was getting
mm-hmm.
manipulated that we talked about. And we were saying who is saying that?
Mm-hmm.
And at first I was like, oh, it's got to be Savathun. She's like taunting us. She's really arrogant.
Mm-hmm.
She wouldn't miss an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
But the more I sat with it, especially through week 8 and going and facing down Quiria, I was like, oh, it must be Quiria because we needed to hear from Quiria somehow.
Right.
To like build up a little bit that confrontation before we went and did it.
Right.
So I retract my previous
your previous theorem.
Yeah, that it was Savathun. I think it was Quiria. Like,
yeah.
Like, kind of hyping up that showdown.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Definitely.
How did we feel about how did we feel about the Quiria showdown? The boss fight?
Yeah, I mean, the whole mission, I did like the mission. I thought it was a good, like, synthesis of everything we've done so far. You know, gameplay-wise, it was good. It did have a little bit of that a little bit of an anti-climax, I think. Because we're defeating a figure that's been around for much longer than just this season, but it's positioned as, like, you know, sort of the end boss of the season. So I think there's kind of a disconnect there where it's like, this is not a new, you know, if it was like a character or a being that was introduced just for this season, then defeating it at the end of the season in this way would feel totally great and satisfying. I'm not sure that it does, given that this is a character, you know, Quiria, that we've interacted with in, like, a shadow way for a long time. I liked it. I mean, it felt good. It's a good fight. It's an interesting mission. I don't know that, there's sort of this, like, it definitely feels like, oh, this is too easy. Like, it can't really be dead. This is too, you know what I mean? But, you know, I don't know. What did you think of it?
Yeah, I was also kind of two minds about it, of being like, I think the mission was satisfying. The boss fight was fun. It had interesting mechanics that we had not seen before, of like the, what was that game show where like the wall moved towards you?
And oh, yeah.
You had to get through it.
Yes. I love
it was
that.
Like that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That was great.
That was pretty fun. I also really liked Quiria's design. Mm-hmm. With the they embraced the transform moniker and made it change forms a couple different times. Mm-hmm. And it's a big Vex Hydra, but it has a big, it has its own, like, big separate head and, like, giant pair of arms on it.
Yep. Yeah. It's kind of mutated, almost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked the unique design, and it if I recall, it does have, I think there's an illustration of it in one of the Grimoire books, mm-hmm. physical books. And I think it's not the same, I don't think, but it does, like, call back to that, which I thought was neat.
Definitely.
So I was satisfied on that level.
Yeah. It was cool as hell.
Yeah, I did enjoy it. And it gave me a different feeling, because even though it's a where I'm going with this is, it made me feel, I felt like there's a comparison to be made here between Zol in War Mines. Mm-hmm. This worked better for me than Zol, I think. And I'm
agree,
kind of trying
yeah.
to be like, why is that?
Yeah.
There is a part of me that still feels like, okay, Quiria, this character that we've known forever is just, like, dead now. Like, we did it. It's over. And obviously we know we still have Savathun to look forward to. It's not like there isn't another bigger bad out there. But,
right.
It does kind of feel like, oh, that was it?
Yeah. Well, I think the mission being such a good mission is, like, my problem with Zol has always been, like, that it's in a strike playlist. So, like, fighting Zol the Worm God when you're just, like, doing strikes and you're, like, conditioned to just be, like, running through them as fast as possible and shooting whatever you can. Like, that context, I think, works, kind of undermines the confrontation. I'm glad that this, they've taken it and now put it in a separate thing, so you go and you do the expunge mission and you're expecting more of a story-based thing, and it's still going to be a Destiny activity, but it's not like, you know, you load into one of several strikes with, you know, and it has a worm god in it. So my problem with Zol has always been more, I've always thought it was more about, like, the context of that encounter happening than it was necessarily about, like, anything else, because you know, there are special mechanics in that strike and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, excellent points about all of this. It's such a good design. I mean, the encounter design with the, like, Vex, and, like, taken sort of shields, like, rotating is, like, a really good visual way to describe, you know, a taken Vex mind. It's fucking cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that was a positive change they made, changing the context of that encounter.
If we look, I kind of feel like, okay, well, at a certain point, we might just need to make peace with this if this worked, because if they continue down this path of the seasonal stories are the ongoing story,
yeah,
then we're going to see more of this.
Yeah.
Like they're the seasonal stories are no longer the side stories. It is the it's just the ongoing story. So yeah. I think we should expect for the seasonal bosses to be the named bad guys being pulled from the lore books.
Ah, okay, yes. Which it sounds like, I mean, I like this and find it compelling. I think the pacing of, like, this 8-week story was really nice. You remember we had some, like, real heavy weeks and then some real light weeks. They did a really good job of pacing out this story content. And 8 weeks feels like that's a good, you know, 2 months worth of a story. That's, like, a good chunk of time. If you figure a Destiny season is, you know, 3 to 4 months, like, that is enough to... I guess it seems like it's really different from what you were saying before, the earlier model of, like, you know, the raid comes out and that's where the great story, you know, culminates in, but then there's nothing for a period of months.
Right.
This feels much more like of a modern, like, game as live service kind of version of that thing. But I'm liking it so far. If the writing is bad in a future season, I could see it being kind of a chore, but so far it's been good. I want to talk about some of the...
I've just been...
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, sorry.
No, finish your thought.
Okay, I was just going to say that I've been really impressed... I think I might have said this before, but restating that I've been really impressed with the way that they not only kept it engaging throughout each week, but then they had timed pieces of that story unlocking at different intervals within each week, which I thought was pretty impressive.
Mm. Can you clarify that?
Yeah, like certain weapons didn't come out until, like, whatever week, and, like, that was when, like, the lore tab on that weapon would have been relevant. Or, like, you get different dialogue in the seasonal activity based on what week you're at in the story. Sometimes within that same week. Where it's like, I could go run an override mission and I get one set of dialogue, but then I go do the weekly story and then a new set of dialogue unlocks the next time I go run override that references the things that happened in the story.
Yes.
And then, like, pacing out the pages of the lore book to coincide with each weekly story update. Like, all of those things were interlocking to tell the story of the season, which was really impressive to me.
Yeah, and it feels like they're really getting that, they got that down really well this season, like those connections.
And we got in-game cutscenes and fucking, like, putting it right up front for everybody.
Yeah, like, we got to watch Osiris and Saint, like, have a conversation more than once. And all these other characters have conversations. We got to see Mithrax, like, talk to, you know, it's good. The character acting in those moments is part of what makes them so absorbing.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about the interactions that you have after you do the mission where you defeat Quiria. So there's kind of two main ones. One is go talk to Ikora, you know, she kind of just talks about, you know, we've defeated Quiria, but, you know, there's, you know, more fight to come, blah, 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 kind of just, you know, leader things. But something that really bugged me was one of the things she said was that, through using the future war cult future prediction device that Lakshmi, well, that any future war cultist using that device could runs the risk of becoming, you know, quote, insane. And that, you know, Lakshmi's judgment is being clouded by these visions. And that really kind of, I mean, part of it's that it kind of bothered me because how many times in real life have we seen like racist, just white supremacist acts of violence excused by saying, oh, well, it was, you know, it was a mental health concern. Or, oh, they were, you know, there was just a, you know, how many times have we seen the media kind of create, use that, say that hatred is just bad judgment? And I just don't want to let Lakshmi off the hook like that just yet, because it you know, it just left a bad taste in my mouth because of how many times in real life we've seen that line get taken by, you know, reactionary people in power sort of saying, you know, oh, well, they're just, there's an underlying mental health condition. It's like, hatred is not a mental health condition. Inciting violence is not, that's that, like, she knew what she was doing, and, you know, kind of giving her this out, as we've talked about before, of being clouded by the Vex, you know, the Vex simulations. Like, I don't buy that. I buy that she's like a power, she's come across as a power hungry character who, you know, I mean, we were just talking about how she's on the public radio complaining about being silenced. It's like she couldn't be any more clearly,
right?
You know, her faction couldn't be any more clearly referencing the far right in America. So,
yep,
Ikora giving her this out to me kind of, I saw some people being, you know, really like happy about Ikora, you know, throwing her off the radio and things like that. But it just kind of solidified Ikora as like a reactionary establishment figure, which is, you know, that, I mean, that's, you know, that's consistent with how she's been depicted this season. I still like Ikora, but she's very much a part of the Vanguard establishment, and acting, you know, kind of acting as such. And then we get, so we talk to Ikora, and then we go talk to Lakshmi, and she says, you know, I can admit when I'm wrong, you know, unlike our current leaders. And it's like, okay, she's still at it. Like, she's still doing the thing that she does.
Right.
She doesn't sound, you know, she's not repentant for causing violence. She's not apologizing for misunderstanding what's going on. You know, she says, you know, oh, the city deserves someone who can act and who does what's right, even if it's unpopular. Which is, she has a totally different idea of what that is. Like, what I see as doing what's right, even if it's unpopular, is sheltering the Elixni in the last city. But that's not what she sees. You know what I mean? Like, Lakshmi is right to think that the right thing to do is still exterminating the other race, the people who weren't here before and are here now. Like, that is still what she's going for. So, like, I don't buy this, like, oh, she was clouded by the Vex, like, at all. Us having to defeat Ikora has not made her give that up or see the light about, you know, like, her development is different from, like, Saints, for example. Like, we got really strong character development with Saint 14 this season, mm-hmm. where he, you know, we saw him grapple with change and accept, you know, kind of start to accept it and like become an accomplice. But that's not the story we're getting with Lakshmi. So it's fun to have a character to yell at. I mean, it's fun to be like, yeah, fuck this guy. Like, I'm not saying that I, as we've talked about before, that I only like the characters whose views align with my own. I just think that mm-hmm. what they're doing with Lakshmi right now is interesting.
Yeah, it's a good illustration of, you know, I don't know if this is what they're going for necessarily, but it seems to me like they're illustrating how reactionaries co-opt the language of leftist causes in order to coerce and like assuage people and like convince people of their righteousness.
Right.
in order to like further their own goals under guise of the popular language.
Right, exactly. And I think Ikora and Lakshmi are in some ways two different versions of that.
Yeah. Lakshmi on that transmission where she was, you know, being silenced over the loudspeaker, was saying things that on the surface we have said. Like, she's saying things that we would agree with, saying the Vanguard are in their ivory tower. They don't care about you, the people. We need representation of the city, of its people. We need to give the city back to the people. Like, we've said that.
Right. Right.
But that, like, so, like, on the surface, we should agree with Lashy. But if you scratch any deeper than the surface level, like, the rot is clear. Like, the, like, that, that is the classic, tactic of co-opting the leftist cause.
Right.
And just like you say, Ikora being the position of the liberal establishment is like showing the fascist and the liberal joining, the classic tale of the fascist and the liberal shaking hands and working together to maintain the status quo.
Yeah, and like the fact that Ikora is so quick to say, you know, well, like, she's just misguided now, like, we can rehabilitate her, just shows the way that they're more in solidarity with one another than either of them are with anybody else.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. So, but it's good. This is all, like, good and smart. I'm not saying that this is, like, a bad story. This is interesting. But, you know, how much the writers are aware of this is always a question for me. How much they think about it in these terms. But I think it's...
Right.
I think at least on some level it is intended. So yeah, that was, those were just the two kind of... And then there's also an after mission, you know, conversation that you have with Mithrax. Mithrax saying, you know, the distrust between my people and yours will not vanish in a single act, but slowly over time. Like, Mithrax is a deeply hopeful character, but not, and, you know, ultimately where this story ended up this season was a very positive outcome of the Splicer Guardian learning this Elixni ritual or process, or learning how to, the Guardian learning how to become a sacred Splicer. And through that process, starting to rehabilitate the relationship between humans and Elixni. That this is, just because this one thing happened doesn't mean that there is full, you know, trust amongst everyone. It doesn't mean that this one victory is not, you know, does not solve every problem. And I really liked Mithrax's acknowledgement of that.
Yeah.
It felt much more like real than Ikora's kind of version of it. Mithrax is such a good character. I'm so fascinated with him right now. I don't have like a big theory of like, you know, what is Mithrax doing here? What are we doing with Mithrax in this story? But I'm excited to let this season settle and see where it falls out and like see what I think of his role in this story in a few months, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially because, although we haven't seen the final, there's still some part of the season, there's some sort of epilogue that was hinted at, but that we haven't seen yet, so I don't know what that's going to be. I don't know how we'll leave off.
Yeah. Hilariously, there was a glitch where the final lore page from the Beneath the Endless Night lore book, which is I think it's called Epilogue, right? That's why we're all, that's why we think there's going to be an epilogue in the first place.
I think that was from a Triumph that was like,
oh, really?
Experience okay. The epilogue.
Oh, gotcha.
We like, oh, it's like it's still locked as of this week, week 9. So it's
gotcha.
Like, oh, I don't know what that's going to be yet.
Right. So, hilariously, there seems to have been a glitch where they rolled out the final page that seems like it will go with that epilogue. It accidentally is accessible in the game, seemingly earlier than it's meant to be. And neither of us have read it because we are huge sticklers.
Yes.
Like, the game put it in front of us and we were like, this seems like a bug, and then didn't read it.
Yep. Which, yeah, we were like, are we supposed to have this?
Yeah, we were like, I don't know, so.
Yeah, one of our friends was like, I don't think we're supposed to have this yet. And I was like, oh, we were like, oh, shit. And he was like, yeah, don't read this.
We were like, okay.
We were like, okay, we won't.
Thank you, won't do it, so.
Yep.
I just think our commitment to to our ways is funny. So, you know, more TK on that. I'm going to talk very briefly about week 9 and the solstice. I don't know what solstice it's supposed to be. I was thinking about this yesterday. Like, I guess it's technically supposed to be the summer solstice, but it started on July 6th, which is emphatically not solstice.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm sure at some point it was, and, you know, I'm sure there are timeline concerns, and it's more important that the event happen over a period of time that makes sense in the, you know, development of the game than it being exactly on the solstice, the summer solstice or whatever. But I was still laughing about it. I was still like, it's not the solstice though.
Yeah. In universe, it's the solstice of heroes. But yeah, I hear what you're saying about like on our real world calendar.
I mean, solstice also like means something. I guess there could be different, it's been so many years that, you know, with the cosmological shifts or whatever, that the solstice in Destiny World could be on the 6th of July, I guess.
Oh,
right?
I see. Wow.
Yeah.
Damn, could we determine what year we're in based on the solstice in Destiny 2?
If you're an astronomer, please do this math and get back to us.
Damn.
I took enough astronomy to know that that's something you probably could do, but not enough to know how to do it.
I don't have too many things to say about week 9 right now. The EAC is back. That's all well and good. Armor looks cool.
Grindy.
Yep.
They were, Master Vog came out too at the same time. Master Vault of Glass,
right.
Also known as an activity that I perpetually want to be the kind of person who wants to do, but don't think that I am. You know, I want to be the kind of person who wants to do Master Vault of Glass, but you heard me talk about doing it on day one, and I asked, you know, some of the people who are doing Master Vault, is this easier, harder, or about the same as day one? They say, oh, it's harder. And I'm like, well, then I think it's maybe for a different audience than me, which is cool. That's
right.
Fine.
Right.
Yeah. Definitely, between that and the solstice, definitely Destiny was like ratcheting up the FOMO this week, you know, the like kind of grindy things, the things that take a lot of time, a lot of effort, definitely getting emphasized, which is good. I mean, it's probably this point in the season, like 9-10 weeks into the season, is probably a good time to release like the hardcore, quote unquote, kind of stuff.
Right.
So.
Then it lets us take a break.
Yeah. Yeah, I know! I can go play Guilty Gear!
Yep, exactly.
And that's okay.
And that's fine.
Mm-hmm. So whenever I'm, you know, talking about things like this, like, oh, who would ever do that? It's not like... people do it, and that's good, but it's...
Yeah. No, we're just not those people.
Yeah, but it's hard to accept that I'm not that person, Mike.
Mm.
It's hard for me to accept, but it's true. And I... because I really, you know, I think it's cool that people can do it.
Yeah.
But it's hard
and
to...
And it's not...
I'm
I
making
don't
my
think,
peace with
I don't,
it. I'm sure we could do it.
Right, right. It's just like, is that what you want to spend your time doing?
Unfortunately, I just don't think I have enough time.
Yeah.
But we are still going to get the Solstice close.
Yeah.
Probably.
Probably.
I'm going to drag you through it, I guess, is what I'm saying. You're coming with me.
Oh, shit.
We're going to do it.
All right.
Not because you and I will do it separately, but we're going to do it because I don't want to do it by myself. And okay, you're on the fence enough to where I can drag you into it, so. That's what I mean.
Fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
The brief things that I do have to call out are there, if you haven't already, go back to the Elixni Quarter, and there are a couple new things to scan and hear from Ido. The coolest thing to me was when you, so if you haven't gone and done that, go and do that. I'm just going to say what it is right now. The coolest thing to me was to load into the area and look to the skybox, and there's the Traveler there, and beneath the Traveler is a giant Ketch, which is the big fallen space cruiser.
That's so cool.
Sorry, the big Elixni space cruiser.
I haven't been there yet.
Ah, yes.
That's so cool. I have to go
it's,
check it, it out.
It rules. It's really cool.
Sounds sick.
A sight I did not ever think I would see.
That's awesome.
So that's really cool. And the House of Light has updated their house sigil on their banner, which is neat.
Good shit.
Sort of related to that, one of the things you get from doing the kind of intro quest to the Solstice is the new shotgun, which is called Compass Rose. And I was very excited to talk about this. Did you happen to read the lore tab on it?
I did not.
Okay. Well, then I will preserve some of it, and we can talk about it next week.
Okay.
But the thing I am very excited about is that we get to hear from a couple of characters that I was excited to hear mention of earlier in the season, and that has come back around, and we got to follow up with them. So that is all I'll say, and we can talk about it next week.
Oh my god! Sorry, I just started reading it. I read the first...
Oh.
I wrote the first section of it. Because I went to Zavala's office earlier today, and I was just like, when I was running around the tower, I was like, let me go see what's in here, and there was a cat. And I was like, has there always been a live cat in here?
Oh, no, there hasn't. I didn't see that.
There's a cat in Zavala's office.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I'll have to go see the cat.
I was just like, oh, who are you? Oh, it's a Kiki. It's a little Kiki. And then I started reading, and that's part of what they're talking about in this lore piece. That rules.
That's cool.
That's great. What a little treat.
It was. It felt like a little treat.
Mm-hmm. That's what this.
So I was happy for that.
That's what I like it when events like Solstice, any EVA event, I like when it feels like a little treat, you know, just like, doop, there you go. I would be, I think, tired if they tried to like tell me a lot of lore about EVA, and tried to make it like a really serious event. I'm glad that it's just.
Oh, let me tell you about the fucking EVA's Journey lore book.
God. I've probably
I
read
had to
it.
Grind so many goddamn daily heroic story missions to get the pages of that fucking book.
Oh god.
Ugh. And of course it was fucking RNG, whether or not you got one.
Of course.
Jeez. Mm.
Of course.
I'm not bitter. I'm not bitter about it.
Mike, bitter never.
No, of course not.
All right.
Quickly on the butterfly meme front.
Oh, sure.
Very quickly. There was a line that Osiris had at the end of, at the beginning of the Quiria expunge mission. The one where you, I think it was called Delphi?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And he says something along the lines of, in spite of everything you accomplished, I still underestimated you. I won't make that mistake again. Something's going on there.
It was a mistake to underestimate us. Yeah, and the line read on it is a little spooky too.
Yes.
It's like a little bit like, yeah.
Why would that be a mistake, Osiris?
Right, exactly.
Yep.
So, anyway.
And also we had the, when you mentioned earlier about us going to Tatooine Ikora, and one of the things that Ikora says there is like, great job defeating Quiria. We still don't know what Sabathun's goal was.
Yeah.
Like, what was the point of all this? She must have been after something.
Right.
And I think the answer to that was back in the Endless Night page where we were hearing from, you know, seeing Sabathun's point of view. Mm-hmm. And I think, if I recall, the end of that lore card is her looking up at the Traveler. And I think that's what we're supposed to take away, is like, she... Anyway, I'll cut to the chase. Her target was the Traveler the whole time.
Yes.
Like, she needed a way to infiltrate the last city to, like, subvert our expectations to her ultimate goal being the Traveler, so...
Right.
I think that's the simple answer to that question, and it's just a matter of, like, what's she going to do with it now that she's here? Like, what's the next step?
Right, totally. We'll find out.
Yep.
Find out next season, maybe?
Speaking of, Bungie announced the announcement date.
Yeah, uh-huh. They put out a save the date. They were like, but not for a wedding. Whatever. Yeah, what is it, August 24th?
Yes, August 24th.
Great. I remember it now. It's not even written down. It's just burned in my brain.
Yeah.
They succeeded.
Mission accomplished.
They got me.
Yep.
So, it's kind of good to know, like, you know, roughly when we can expect that stuff. You know, more information about where we're headed from here.
Yeah.
Anything else, my friend?
I think that's it for today. We are going to talk about Achilles Weaves a Cocoon lore book, and there's another seasonal story that's been kind of weaving throughout in the background about the Elixni story of a couple of Elixni in the tower in the city. Mm-hmm. During the season. We're going to get to that next time.
Yeah.
Those things... We're going to get to those next time. And also, still want to catch up on some listener emails. I know we haven't gotten to those for a little bit, so we're gonna aim to answer those next episode.
Yeah, that's the plan. In theory, I guess we'll have some light... We won't have as much like week-to-week story stuff for the rest of the season. So hopefully we'll have more time to get to some of those things that have not really fit so far.
Right. But you could still send us an email in the meantime.
Oh,
if
yeah.
If you want to.
Yeah, please. That would be great. You can email us at sometimetoexplain@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Kindly avoid including spoilers, which for us means data mine things or things that are not meant to be seen in the game yet.
For this week specifically, don't send us anything about that final Endless Night
page.
Yeah,
look, we know.
Even though it's technically in the game.
I know. See, that's what I'm saying. It's so funny that we're, like, this committed to it, that we won't even read the thing that's technically in the game. Like, I could read it, but I won't, because I don't feel like I'm supposed to.
Exactly.
Can you tell we were raised Catholic?
Oh, shit. Is that the reason? No. Wow. Damn.
I don't know. Maybe. Could be any number of things. But anyway. Yeah. Where might the listenership find you around the internet, Michael?
Thanks for asking. You can find me at MacLovin on Twitter or at my website, michaelmccubbin.com. And you could find me on the Yu Yu Hakusho Rewatch podcast, which I do with our friend Andrew. And that is called Talking the Spirit Realm. And Andrew is also writing a episode by episode breakdown in blog format. And that is on their website, which is called Watching the Spirit Realm. So I recommend everyone check that out. They're really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're awesome. The podcast is great. The episode write-ups are great. I don't even watch Yu Yu Hakusho, and I'm still really, I'm still really enjoying both of those things. So,
awesome.
The quality of your work is great. So check those things out if you like what we've been up to around here.
Where can people find you, Kit?
Oh, fucking don't. But...
Fair enough.
Yeah, fucking don't. But if you want to, you can find me at Kit_Boyote on Twitter. I've been following more Destiny artists lately. Like fan artists, community artists. So that's been kind of fun. I've been trying to, like, put some of that stuff up. And I've also been watching Gundam, so right now there's lots of Gundam shit on there.
Hell yeah.
So, it's actually, I would say right now it's kind of worth a look. Usually it's not, but right now, check it out.
Nobody fucking send Kit any Gundam spoilers either. I will come for you.
Yeah, Michael will come to your house and kill you if you spoil Gundam for me.
Do not fucking spoil Gundam for Kit, please. He's watching 79 right now, and he's not done. Just let him enjoy it. That's all, folks. Thank you for joining us, and we hope to see you next time on Sometime to Explain. Bye.
How much could we?